Good morning, everyone. How are we? Good. Firstly, may I apologise that we've cooped you up in a building on such a beautiful day. I'd even much rather be out there enjoying the weather. Are we working on here, Johnny? Let me just see whether technology has failed me or not. It looks like we're not working at the minute. Has it worked? Excuse me, everyone. Just start again. Otherwise, I might have to get my glamorous assistant, Johnny, to do it. Has it worked? Oh, stupid technology. Apple can't make anything good, can they? Okay. Okay. So just to introduce myself, my name's Rick. I'm 34 years old. I know I don't look anything like that. I've aged incredibly well. It's great to be here. I'm one of those rare breeds of pastor's kids who've never rebelled. I've never decided to turn my back on faith and stuff. So it's really great to be with you today. It's been brilliant yesterday being with your team. You have a fantastic team here of worshippers and technicians and stuff. It was so great to just spend a bit of time with them and be able to learn from them and receive from them at the same time. So it's been a really special time. Seeing as my it does seem to be working. Let's see if it's actually going to play a ball. There we go. All right. Okay. You can see a man multitasking now. It's going to be quite a rare thing. You'll see. Watch this. It'll probably fail me and I'll look stupid, but never mind. Okay, so just a little bit of background. We're going to be looking at the story of Daniel this morning. About 2 years ago, I felt kind of stirred in an evening service I got the opportunity to speak at my church at New Life in Lincoln. And I decided I'd talk on Daniel. Now, Daniel is such a common story. We'll look at Daniel in the lion's den in a minute. But after that, starting this January, we then did a 10-week series on Daniel in our church. So for me, Daniel is a story that we've consumed and really enjoyed looking at. Now, I don't know whether my initial kind of preach on Daniel inspired and motivated and was the pioneering and innovative moment in our church to go, wait a minute, this guy has really got something. Or whether my talk was such heresy that they thought they needed to redress the balance and tell the correct story of Daniel. I'll let you judge that this morning as I talk about this. So I've entitled my talk, Shape Your Life for Impact. When we're Christians, when we have a relationship with God, we want a life that has an impact on other people. We're never called to be people who sit back and enjoy the fact that we've got a ticket to heaven and we're safe in the knowledge that we know where we're going. There's a responsibility that comes with being a Christian that we have to engage with. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. So we're shaping our lives for impact. And we're going to look at the story of Daniel in the lion's den. It's Daniel chapter 6. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut it up into 6 different chunks, and we're going to have a heading for each one and look at how we can relate our lives to the 6 different parts that we've pulled out of this whole chapter. So it's kind of a semi-Bible study. But I don't know what you remember about the story of Daniel. I don't know whether it's something that you learnt in Sunday school. I don't know if you've ever felt like Sunday school sometimes teaches you a story that when you get older you go, is that really the story? And what I want to do is unpack Daniel a little bit this morning and see that what we remember isn't necessarily exactly how the story goes. And let's look a bit deeper into the story and see what God might want to say. So when we look back, what do you remember about the story of Daniel in the lion's den? Firstly, people will often say, well, Daniel refused to obey the laws of the land. And as a result, he was punished. He was thrown into the lion's den as punishment. But then God protected him, which is good, because God saved the day, which is great, and everyone loved God. Everyone was surprised and lived happily ever after. That is the rough synopsis of what we learn as children about Daniel in the lion's den. But the reality is, the story is much more sophisticated than that, much more complicated and much deeper. And when we understand the culture that Daniel was having to live in and all those different kind of things, it's quite a challenge and something we can massively learn from. As I said, we've just unpacked this whole book of Daniel in the last 10 weeks or so since January. But for me, if we're honest about our society, we can see that the situation Daniel was in isn't that different from what we face in some ways. So Daniel's society was an entirely alien society to Christianity. It wasn't interested in God or relationships with God. It was in Babylon. He was living in Babylon, and he was sent over there. It wasn't the place he wanted to live, but he had to be a Christian in a society that really wasn't a God-loving society. And if we look at our world today and our society that we exist in, it's not particularly keen to embrace God and the things that God is doing. And sometimes the idea that you have a faith in God jars against other people's opinions or situations. So Daniel teaches us how we can model godly behaviour in an alien society. So for me, this story is really relevant to our time on this earth, that in our country even, we've got to stand up against things that don't go along the line of what we believe. And how do we be a Christian in that environment? Daniel teaches us that, and we've got some great things to learn from that this morning. So let's read the first bit, Daniel chapter 6, verses 1 to 3. I'm reading from the New Living Translation, in case anyone's got multiple translations or loads of Bibles with them. That's a good one. Okay, chapter 6, verses 1 to 3. It says this: Darius the Mede decided to divide the kingdom into 120 provinces, and he appointed a high officer to rule over each province. The king also chose Daniel and two others as administrators to supervise the high officers and protect the king's interests. Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all the other administrators and high officers. Because of Daniel's great ability, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. So this is the beginning of the story. And what we learn about Daniel is Daniel was someone who was incredibly good. So what can we do? We can do our best. We can look at his example and decide that we're going to do our best. Daniel was good. He was really good. And it says in that passage that he proved himself better than all of these other people. He was almost in a presidential, a prime ministerial role in the country. So he was a point of massive influence. And he was so good at his job that he got elevated above other people to that point because he proved himself. That was through hard work, through dedication, through his wisdom. This stuff made him stand out in that society. And as we looked at a minute ago, it wasn't in a safe Christian society. It wasn't in a place where it's easy just to do what you want to do and everyone recognises your skills and qualities. This was in an entirely alien society against his Christian values. But he stuck true to his beliefs and his word and his values and stuck true to God. And as a result, he stood out in the most positive way. This wasn't a great Christian setting. It was dangerous and a difficult culture, but it was his godly character and his values that enabled him to shine above all other people. And I think the challenge for us is when we look at that phrase, do your best, how do we do our best using our God-given gifts in a society that doesn't recognize God? That is a challenge. And how often do we fall into the trap of kind of disregarding our God-given talents and gifts that we might use in a church setting? How often do we disregard those and think that they're inappropriate or kind of not acceptable in the outside world? How many times do we disregard those? And that is a challenge. But if we can engage those kind of things, our skills and our talents and the gifts that God has given us, and put it into society, then this is one of the ways we can do exactly that. We can do our best. There was a great synopsis of the book of Daniel that I really enjoyed reading. And when we think about the culture he was in, this is a great way of looking at it. It says here, obedience to God is difficult when we are bullied into compliance to the God-ignoring culture out of sheer survival. This is the challenge. When we're in a culture that doesn't accept that God is right and God's way is the right way, it's so easy that we are bullied into compliance with the way everyone else does it. Now, in church, it's fairly straightforward because we're pretty much all in the same gang. But when you go out into the workplace, how do you do this? How do you stand against what everyone else is doing and stand up for what you know is intrinsically right to do and what God has called you to do? And that synopsis for me is great. Obedience to God is difficult when we are bullied into compliance to the God-ignoring culture out of sheer survival. And sometimes it feels like that. Just to survive, we have to go along for what everyone else is doing. And I think the question for us to consider is, are we giving our best in society, allowing God to shine through us? God has given us gifts and talents. Let's not keep them secret and just let them out in a church safe environment. Let's be prepared to step out and impact other people's lives and let God shine through us in those dark places. Okay, so that's the first point. Let's do our best. The second part of the passage we're going to look at is Daniel 6, verse 4. So let's read that. Then the administrators, then the other administrators and high officers began searching for some fault in the way Daniel was handling government affairs, but they couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn. He was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. So, how can we learn from this? What have we got? Well, it says here, live with integrity. Integrity is a massive challenge for all of us. Can we be people who are so consistent and non-hypocritical in our lives that we really do stand out from everyone else? The part in that passage in verse 4 that I love is it says about Daniel, he was faithful, always responsible, and completely trustworthy. There's no kind of, sometimes he was all right, most of the time he was great, and sometimes he let everyone down a little bit. He was completely trustworthy, always responsible, and he was faithful. The kind of guy you wanted to be around and wanted to be able to lean on. And when we think about that, living with integrity in this whole passage, it's easy to almost skip over this verse and think this is just a kind of filler verse to give us a little bit more information that just to remind us that Daniel's a nice guy. But actually, to me, this is a significant verse. The people who were around him, working with him, saw that he was good and didn't like the fact that he was being given all this responsibility, that he was rising to the top because he was so good. So just as society sometimes does, and our nation is brilliant at doing, we build people up to positions and then look for the first opportunity to destroy them and knock them down. It's such a sad state of affairs, and we find this through our media and everything, that we love seeing the underdog rise to the top, but we take great delight in seeing them crash down to the bottom. And we see that all the time through our talent shows and all that kind of stuff. We almost find it funny and humorous that people only last for a year, but actually sometimes these people's lives are in tatters, and they're still living, trying to live this dream 10 years later. And that's painful. But that might be the way society works. But how do we then stand against that? Daniel faced that. People tried to dig up dirt and find problems in what he was doing. They looked into all of his dealings. And is there anything that he's doing that we can catch him out on? The fact was, no, there was not anything. Now, if I was to ask you that question, I'm definitely not going to ask me that question, but if I was to ask you that question, is there anything that if someone dug up, kind of tried to look into your dealings or the way you behave, would they find anything that could potentially be hypocritical or they could criticise you for? Because I would be absolutely ashamed if people started looking and digging into the things and seeing the little details that I do that people could quite easily say, well, that's a bit hypocritical. How can you do that and say you're a Christian? This is the reality that Daniel shows us, that it is possible to stand up in these societies and behave honourably and in the right way. And sometimes it's when we question our own lives, it's what kind of things do you say to other people? How do you behave? How do you act in certain situations? What kind of jokes do you go along with in the workplace? Is this stuff just all acceptable? Does it not really matter? Or actually, if people knew that you were a Christian, would it actually change their opinion of you? And I think the problem is we have a conscience that sometimes we desensitise. We get into situations and we play down the importance of situations or the things that are going on. And we almost think it's not a problem. The one for me is parking. I am dreadful at leaving my car in parking spaces for absolutely ages. I used to have an office where the only parking spaces were half an hour outside. I'd leave it in there all day. And I'd think, oh, well, that's great. Because I've not got caught, it was fine. And they almost have this attitude where as long as you don't get caught, it means it's no longer wrong. It's all right. My work colleague that I murdered and hid in the filing cabinet, no one's found them. So it doesn't matter. It's not wrong because no one's found out. So it's fine. It's almost like I haven't murdered a colleague and put them in the filing cabinet. Filing cabinet's tiny. I couldn't get them in. So, but this is the reality. We desensitize our conscience because it just feels awkward. And we get so used to doing these things. It might be, like traveling in the car is always a nightmare. It might be that you're used to always speeding. That it doesn't really matter. You think as long as you don't get caught by a traffic cop, it means it's okay. And if you manage to navigate a journey and go 95, 100 mile an hour the whole way and no one catches you, then it was just a really good day. And God was obviously really blessing you. It's not wrong then, is it? But actually, it is wrong if people look into our lives. And those are just two kind of very easy examples. But it scales down into all sorts of different ways. What kind of things do you do in your life that you just ignore because it doesn't seem like it's going to really be a problem? But if someone was to look into that, would they be able to criticize you? And that's really, really difficult. But in this story, Daniel's integrity stood out so much that he clearly was an amazing man of God. And they couldn't find any fault with him. And it almost seems impossible that someone could live a life that is that good. So we need to live with integrity. The next part is Daniel 6, verses 5 to 11. So let's read that. It says, so they concluded, our only chance of finding grounds for accusing Daniel will be in connection with the rules of his religion. So the administrators and high officers went to the king and said, long live King Darius. We are all in agreement, we administrators, officials, high officers and advisors and governors, that the king should make a law that that will be strictly enforced. Just seeing where you go to. Cannot be revoked. Okay. Give orders that for the next 30 days, and any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions. And now, your majesty, issue and sign this law so it cannot be changed. An official law of the Medes and Persians that cannot be revoked. So King Darius signed the law. But when Daniel learned... When Daniel learned that the law had been signed, he went home and knelt down as usual in his upstairs room with its windows open toward Jerusalem. He prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. Then the officials went together to Daniel's house and found him praying and asking for God's help. So, what can we grab from this little bit? What I've entitled it is, we need to have a windows open, no compromise faith. So in Daniel's situation, he found that he hadn't done anything wrong in the way he lived his life, but the people who wanted to trick him knew that the way they could trick him is cause him to have to choose between the law and his faith. So they got King Darius, who didn't seem to be the sharpest king in the existence of the world, to pass this law that would mean anyone who bowed down to anything other than him would be thrown into the den of lions. And I think the people, obviously, as they looked at Daniel, obviously looked at him and could see that Daniel's faith was serious to him, that it was everything to him, that if there was one thing he would not compromise on, it was his faith. So he's obviously known for his commitments and his beliefs and the fact that he had this no compromise faith that we're talking about. Faith in Daniel's God was not high on the political agenda. So because it was an alien society, the law was quite simply passed. It wasn't a stress for him to get it through because God wasn't important. And actually, the idea that the king would have everyone praying to him for 30 days was seen as quite a nice thing. But for Daniel, when he looked at this law, he knew that it was never an option to compromise. He knew that... up until this point, he'd obeyed all the laws of the land. He'd even changed his name to a Babylonian name, Belteshazzar, so that he would kind of blend with society to a certain extent. But he knew throughout whatever he did to fit into society, there was this point of no compromise where he wouldn't step beyond that. So he obeyed the laws, but he knew that this higher law of serving God could not be compromised at any point. And the interesting thing for me is when Daniel then goes away and he's told he's not allowed to pray to anyone other than the king, when he goes away, what he could have done and what I probably would have done is gone home got into my house and thought, right, there's this law which means I'm going to be thrown if I'm found praying to God. So what I'll do is I'll shut the windows and I'll just carry on as normal. No one will ever know. And then me and God, we're sorted, we're happy. And actually, we just keep moving forward like this. He could have done that. And he probably would have got away with it. But the fact that he left his window open and continued, it says in the passage, he continued as normal in his practice, was a major thing. That what it proves is that Daniel trusted God to such a level that he didn't. He knew what the consequences would be if he was found out. But he trusted God that whatever would happen as a result of his actions, that God was the most important thing. That God would either see him through all of that, even if he died, he trusted that he would be with God and that his life would still be okay. So he had this windows open, no compromise faith. He didn't sneak away and secretly pray. He carried on as before. Not with arrogance or pride. He didn't stand at the throne and shout at them saying, I will not give in. He just carried on in his usual great kind of character-filled way and quite a nice, sensitive way. And I think the question for us is when we look at how Daniel adopted this situation, could we say we would do the same? Do we have a point of no compromise? In our settings, whether that's at home or with friends or at work, all these different places, have we got a point where we say that is a no compromise for me? My values and my commitment to God means I won't step over this line. And I've got to be honest with you, there's times where I probably don't get that right. But actually, if I want to be a witness and have a life of impact for other people, this is the kind of stuff that I need to do. How far do you go? How far towards the line of no compromise do you go? And how many times do you step over it? And is it something, have you even got a line of no compromise? Is there even a value in your life that stops you doing stuff? But the key thing is Daniel knew what would happen, knew what could happen. But he knew that whatever happened, he trusted in God to see him through. So the next part, I think it's part number four, Daniel 6, verses 12 to 16. this is what it says. So they went straight to the king and reminded him about his law. Did you not sign a law that for the next 30 days, any person who prays to anyone, divine or human, except to you, your majesty, will be thrown into the den of lions? Yes, the king replied. That decision stands. It's an official law of the Medes and Persians, and it cannot be revoked. I'm going to read it off here because then I'm not going to keep getting caught. Cannot be revoked. Then they told the king, that man Daniel, one of the captives from Judah, is paying no attention to you or your law. He still prays to his God three times a day. Hearing this, the king was very angry with himself for signing the law. He tried to find a way to save Daniel. He spent the rest of the day looking for a way to get Daniel out of his predicament. In the evening, the men went together to the king and said, Your Majesty, you know that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no law that the king signs can be changed. So at last the king gave orders for Daniel to be arrested and thrown into the den of lions. The king said to him, May your God, whom you worship continually, rescue you. A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den. The king sealed the stone with his own royal seal and the seals of his nobles so that no one could rescue Daniel from the lions. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night fasting. He refused his usual entertainment and couldn't sleep at all that night. So King Darius was almost tricked. He was not the sharpest guy. He valued Daniel. He'd allowed Daniel to rise to this place, and he obviously held him in huge high regard for the things that he would do. But he failed to understand when he signed this law that this would discount Daniel, that this would cause Daniel to be in trouble. So we need to think that Daniel obviously, when the law got passed and they went and told him that Daniel had broken the law, suddenly the king was massively impacted. He was ashamed that he'd passed this law. He was frustrated that he'd done it. And I think in that moment, the king began to realise the impact that Daniel had made and realised the importance that Daniel's faith must have had to him. So when we look at this phrase, that Daniel had a life that leaves a mark, that there was obviously a massive influence. Once he knew that Daniel was going to be thrown into the den of lions, which in the king's mind it would equal death, that he would lose Daniel from his team and as an advisor, he realized that this was a problem, that he suddenly valued everything that Daniel stood for. The king was mortified, tried to sort it out. He can't, he won't, he eats, he won't sleep. He knows he's made a complete mistake. He knows he's done something that is going to make him lose his prized asset in that way. And he says towards the end, that key phrase, his only comfort really in the phrase is, may your God whom you worship continually rescue you. And I think the question for us is, Daniel's life in that moment where Daniel's going to be taken away, his life had made such an impact on the king. Can we look at our lives and say that our life leaves a mark on other people? I hope that mine does. I want my life to impact other people and leave a mark on them so that they appreciate what I do in situations, and the difference that God makes to me can make a difference to someone else. So need to live a life that leaves a mark. The next section, section 5, only one more after this, is Daniel 6, 19 to 24. So it says this: very early the next morning, the king got up and hurried out of the lion's den. When he got there, he called out in anguish, Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God whom you worship able to rescue you from the lions? Daniel answered, long live the king. My God sent his angel to shut the lions' mouths so that they would not hurt me. For I have been found innocent in his sight, and I have not wronged you, your majesty. It then goes on. The king was overjoyed and ordered that Daniel be lifted from the den. Not a scratch was found on him, for he had trusted in his God. Then the king gave orders to arrest the men who had maliciously accused Daniel. He had them thrown into the lion's den along with their wives and children. The lions leaped on them and tore them apart before they even hit the floor of the den. And they all lived happily ever after. What a lovely barbaric end. So, what do we learn from this? We learn that we have a God that shuts the mouths of lions. For me, this is a powerful part of the story, that it seemed like certain death. It seemed that there was no way out. But as Daniel, who apparently at this point was about 80 years of age, which I never realised. I just assumed he was really sprightly and could fight lions and stuff. Not saying 80-year-olds can't fight lions. I'm sure they could. But he was 80 years of age and was taken down here. And to be honest, no one assumed that he would come out alive. And Darius kind of had this only comfort, may your God rescue you. But it was kind of it's something that he threw out there as a hope. So God had shown his power in this situation and saved Daniel. And what's interesting is when it talks about not a scratch was found on him, it doesn't sound to me like Daniel was thrown into a situation where he had a night of absolute hell and horror. It's not like he was teased and kind of gouged by the lions throughout the entire evening and came out just about alive. He came out with no scratch on him at all, proclaiming how great God was. And what is amazing for me is when we look at what happens, that somehow these lions decided not to attack Daniel. For me, I love the thought that, and we read about it in other passages in the Bible, in Luke chapter 19, verse 40. We look at that phrase and it says, if we did not praise, the rocks would cry out. That creation bows to God. So not just human beings, we think that we're everything. But actually, imagine that in the den, the lions suddenly saw an angel of the Lord and bowed in honour of the angel of the Lord. What an amazing thing. That creation, even a fierce, kind of aggressive animal in its nature, would see the angel of the Lord and just stop. And their mouths would be shut because they bow and respond to the Creator God. They see that the angel is from the Lord and that they respond and obey above what their natural instincts are. And for me, when we look at this phrase, a God that shuts the mouths of lions, all creation bows before our Creator God. And we see that The lions were respectful of the Creator God's messenger. So if we did not praise, even the rocks would cry out. Even lions, ferocious lions that just want to kill and destroy, as we see later on. In their nature, that's what they do, but they stop and bow before the angel of the Lord, the messenger of God. And even though the ending is brutal and the family, I don't know why they put the kids in there, that's the hard bit, you know. But the perpetrators, the accusers, get thrown into the pit. It's actually an essential part of the story, because if we didn't see that, we just assume that these lions were really chilled out, that they were either just weren't really interested in food today and I'll have a night off. And that's what people would have, the kind of people who want to criticise the Bible would have said, yeah, but come on, what kind of lions were they? But actually, the fact that the accusers were thrown in and their bodies couldn't even touch the floor, because the nature of these animals is that they would destroy these people before they could even touch the floor. We see the nature of the beast in that moment. We see that the natural expression and response of a lion is to kill. And without that, we could disregard some of what God has done. But we see the massive contrast between what God does in that situation and then what happens to the accusers later on. So God reveals his power in that moment, and Daniel straight away gives God the glory. So we have a God that shuts the mouths of lions in these situations. The last part then is Daniel 6, 25 to 28. It says this: then King Darius sent this message to the people of every race and nation and language throughout the world. Peace and prosperity to you. I decree that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed, and his rule will never end. He rescues and saves his people. He performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. So, the last part. What do we learn from the story of Daniel here? Well, to me, the key thing is this: that Darius the king begins to change his mentality from earlier before Daniel's thrown in. He says, may your God whom you serve and worship continually save you. It changes from being just your God to proclaiming the kind of attributes and amazing power of the God. So it's almost as if it goes from your God to my God. So Daniel's life shows King Darius a great example of God, and God suddenly then becomes praised by everyone in this situation. And it's no longer just referring to something that Daniel's really interested in. It becomes something that actually he is passionate about. He goes and tells, he doesn't just kind of send a message down to the next village. It says here, he sends this message to the people of every race and nation and language throughout the world. So basically everyone, he proclaims this stuff. And what he says is this: peace and prosperity to you. I decree that everyone throughout my kingdom should tremble with fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God. He will endure forever. His kingdom will never be destroyed. His rule will never end. He rescues and saves his people. He performs miraculous signs and wonders in the heavens and on earth. It sounds to me like Darius has had some kind of encounter with God through that moment. He's not just going, Daniel's God seems all right, so if anyone wants a God, then why don't you give him a go? He's quite a good option. No, this is a proclamation of how amazing God is, because Daniel's life made a difference and stirred something in Darius, and then God proved himself through saving him from the lions. But actually, it wasn't just that God saved him from the lions, it was everything that went before it. Daniel's life was shaped for impact and made a huge difference to the people who then saw what God did. It was just that defining moment where God proved himself that was enough to turn the eyes of the king, and hopefully many people that were under the king as well. So, in summary, let's have a think about what we've learnt. So can we be people that try our best? Daniel tried his best. He was a prime example of a godly character and a great human being who God's values and God's kind of imprint was so clearly on. Can we be people that do that in our everyday life, that try our best? Can we live a life with real integrity? Can we get the small things right to show that even if people were to try and find fault in what we were doing, that they will be able to see that we are people who are of great character and integrity? Can we operate a no-compromise faith? Have you got this point in your life that you say, I'm happy to be kind of alongside all of these things that are going on and supporting my friends and loving and caring for people, but there is a point of no compromise, and that needs to be clear for me and for everyone else? And finally, can we live a life that reflects so much of Jesus that we leave a mark? And that is the challenge for us today. Can your life make that much of a difference to someone else that you leave some kind of imprint of God from you onto those people? Daniel is a wonderful example of that. Against all adversity, he manages to show himself as a great servant of God. That is the call for us. Daniel wasn't set apart as just one person who was asked to do this. It's exactly the same challenge and mission for us. And I suppose we've got to then take that on and decide whether we're going to respond to that. And I just one last challenge for you to think about is we tried to do, since we did this a couple of years ago, every now and then we revisit a challenge called the Integrity Challenge. And it's simply this. It's very basic. I'll read that in just a sec. Come on, computer. The integrity challenge is simply this. Is what I am about to do going to potentially compromise my faith? If you can get this question ingrained in your thinking, is what I'm about to do going to compromise my faith, then maybe it will start to shape the way we behave in different situations. But finally, let's just finish with this. Another synopsis of the book of Daniel. And I love what it says here. It says, century after century, Daniel has shot adrenaline into the veins of God obedience and put backbone into God trust. And that is what we want to do. When we read a story like this, we want to be obedient to God, and we want backbone in our trusting relationship with God. So the challenge is there for you. Are you going to be someone who leaves a mark and has a life that is shaped for impact? Thank you.